Welcome to the Perfectly Sane Show, episode 618. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
I'm glad to be on the show tonight after leading the University of Maryland to that volleyball championship. Woo! Yeah.
Tony, championship volleyball player. Earl is here.
That one took me a second. It is so sad how much news happened.
It's really sad.
A week that it's like, wait, what is? Oh, wait. And I mean, of all the things to make up, that just sounds like a plot of a TV show or a movie where it's like, yeah, you know, I was like this rookie came. I was a poor kid came to this big school. I had my team to like the nationals in volleyball, and it's like. Why? Like, what would that even come up that you need to tell somebody that? But, like, I feel like this guy just enjoys lying.
He does. He is a pathological, like, the definition of a pathological liar. He doesn't even, like,
no.
He lies when he doesn't need to tell anything. So.
Just so if you're confused, we're talking about New York's representative, George Santos, who yes. came out this week that he lied about his volleyball tenure. And is it he took money from... like a foreign agent or something like that? I forget how it goes.
That did circulate as well.
So, yeah, it's been a good week for him. I got no introduction because Tony threw me for a hoop. So I'm
Pearl is here, though. And so is Jeff. And we've got some awards to give out. We're gonna jump right into it because we got a lot to cover, and we may be trying to record our top tens tonight as well. So, see how this all goes. But jumping right into it, column A here on the sheet, guys. 2022 game we wish we got to play but didn't, because reasons. Jeff, what you got?
God of War Ragnarok. Because I don't have a PlayStation 5, and I'm not hooking up my PlayStation 4, and I know I would love it. I love the last one, so.
Would your PlayStation 4 even play it? Like, or
I guess, right? It's on PlayStation
well,
4.
Well, it is. That is. I thought you were having some issues with your
It spits discs out, but I could just
you got it digitally.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good choice there. Good reasoning. Yeah. Mine is the Dark Pictures Anthology, The Devil and Me. I bought it, just did not get around to it. Too much kind of going on at the end of the year. I really like those super massive games, adventure games. Got a really good one in the quarry earlier, and The Devil and Me seemed up my alley. I just did not have the time to get to it. So hoping this month, but we'll see. Earl, what you got?
I got several, but literally, as you mentioned this before we started the podcast, it's like I was going through the game of the year list and realizing that like I spent so much of the year being like, I'm going to wait for X game to go on sale. I'm going to wait until it's on Game Pass, that there's a lot of games I wanted to play that I actually did not end up playing. I think the big one for me is Gotham Knights. You know, if you know me, I'm a huge Batman fan. And I've said since day one, I'm going to get this game. I'm going to play it. And I think even during it went on sale around Thanksgiving, and I think yes. it was like $35 or something like that. And I was like, I'm gonna get it. But I'm like, in my back of my head, I'm like, it's gonna be on Game Pass. So that was just me just psyching myself out to. I mean, it also helped that it didn't get amazing reviews. I
think that's putting it mildly.
It was fine.
It was competent.
Yeah, there were definitely some early reviews that were kind of ripping on it, but I don't think it was like this is not a giant. It was not a giant shit show. It ended up at like, you know, sevens thereabouts.
Yeah. So yeah. But yes, it was like the one that I still want to play. And I mean, I think part of it is that it is, I think because it didn't have four player co-op, I think that would have made it an easier sell. But in addition to that, like I said, Kirby and the Forgotten Man is up there. I think Tony mentioned Marvel's Son, which I think is on sale now. Mm-hmm. We're just like three of the big ones. Oh, and Mario and Rabbit's Box of Hope. We're just like, yeah, I can play these games. I can wait for it on sale. And yeah.
Yeah. Tony, what do you got?
I think the big one for me was Victoria 3, the big new Paradox release. I mostly blame Paradox. They announced the game initially was coming to Game Pass, and then 2 months before release, they changed their mind. And then it came out the same day as the full release of Mount & Blade 2, Bannerlord, which I had already owned. So it was like I could spend $50 to play this game, or I could, you know, play this other game for free. And by the time I was done with Bannerlord, Midnight Suns had released, and I had a bunch of credit on Xbox Live to use. And not only did they not release Victoria 3 on Game Pass, they didn't release it on Microsoft's PC platform. So I couldn't buy it in the Microsoft store. So I had all this credit, and I'll get Midnight Suns. So it's Paradox's fault.
That's not my fault. Good reason as well.
But I will play it at some point because it's gotten like outstanding reviews in the strategy game community. People really seem to like it.
And you were enjoying Midnight Suns, so
yeah.
All right, moving on. Best game we played that wasn't from 2022. Jeff, what you got there?
Mine for me was Tormented Souls, which I think is from 2021. Pretty small, like indie game, but basically feels like a lost early Resident Evil. Like if you like Resident Evil 1-3, it plays a lot like one of those, and that was a nice little treat, a nice little surprise.
I have that now too. I need to get to that one. Tony, what do you got here?
Assassin's Creed Origins, which I did play the year it launched, but when it actually hit Game Pass, I gave it another swing because I never finished it. I also never got into the combat the first time around. Like, I never figured out the system. The second playthrough was awesome. It was probably one of my favorite games of the year. Really, really outstanding. I think even I may like it even more than the last couple Assassin's Creed games, which have become, you know, a little bit bloated.
Mm-hmm.
In comparison, although Origins is also a bit bloated. Like the games are just, they have so much content now you can't really experience it all. But what I did experience was fantastic.
Yeah, Origins is great. I do think it's a little more, it's a little tighter than Odyssey and Valhalla. So.
Yeah.
I have Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. Went back and played that. Was kind of on a I'm always kind of like on a kart racing kick, but I ended up playing that a bit and a lot. I played all the way through it. That game's fantastic. It is probably up there with Mario Kart 8 as one of the best kart racers ever made. Just phenomenal game. It's weird that they did not, you know, replicate that with their follow up to that Team Sonic Team Racing.
Yeah, but you could skip it.
is that not the story of Sonic?
They
do something really well, and then the next game, it's like we're gonna start from scratch because nobody enjoyed it. So,
100% true. Earl, I don't have one listed here for you. Do you have a best game?
I couldn't think of one, but like thinking about it now, I think and again, I think this is the story of the last 2 years. I've said a lot of it is pandemic gaming. But Ghost Recon Wildlands, I've been playing that with some friends, and it's just a ton of fun because the Ghost Recon games are kind of like stealth action games. And we are terrible at stealth, so it's always just like, how long can we go before this becomes a shit show, and we're just trying to fend for our lives? And it's almost constantly that way, but it's always a ton of fun, and I do like how open and expansive that the world is, and it is kind of lively. I do, like, sometimes it's a pain in the ass when you start certain missions and, like, enemies happen to be driving by and spot you, so then that becomes a thing. But it also works for me first. Like sometimes, like freeing the rebels and having them join the battle, so you have somebody to kind of cover. Like, I mean, I hate to say you have cannon fodder, but it is nice to kind of have other people to take some of the drills while you're doing it and stuff like that. And I you know, I like the upgrade system, but again, a lot of it is just like the chaos that me and my friends cause when we try to play a stealth game together.
You guys play it exactly how I play it.
Stealth is impossible. It's not real, is it?
My friends hate playing with me in that game. It's like, when is Chris gonna go loud?
Yes, that is okay. It's always funny because like as soon as it tells you when somebody's it was discovered, and it's like, oh, I guess we're going out now. And then it's like, yes, guns are blazing. The ones that do suck, there are missions specifically where it's like you have, like, if you get caught, it's mission over.
Yeah.
And that's more like, okay, we're like, that's when it becomes a science. Like, okay, one of us will go in advance and the other ones hang back, do nothing. Don't get spotted. Like, one person's just going to sneak around. But like the missions where it's like, you can do whatever. It's like, yes, we can do whatever. And that is like, one friend's just like all into explosives. And like, that's never quiet.
No, not at all. Great. I'm glad you guys are having a good time with that. All right. Tony, this is your category.
Yes.
Strategy game of the year. I see four nominees here.
Yeah, I saw Jeff tried to stick in, I'm assuming it was Jeff, Sparks of Hope a couple of times. I deleted it, and then I saw it came back, and I'm like, who put it back? I'm deleting this again. I have played a little bit of the game, and I watched my son play a lot of it. I haven't played enough for it to be on that list, but what I have played, I see it as more of a puzzle solver than a strategy game. So sorry, Jeff, I don't really consider it for this category. It's good. I am not saying it's bad. That is not what I said at all. I am just saying
I don't agree with you.
In terms of what I consider to be a strategy game, it is not nearly deep enough. Bannerlord, which I talked about a little bit earlier, being able to like raise huge armies and, you know, direct them around on the battlefield while also being a combatant. Really, really fun, unique gameplay. Really enjoyed that. Warhammer 3, I mean, I'm obsessed with the Total War series, as you all know at this point. I think it kind of is a little behind its predecessor. They kind of launched this one a little before it's ready. It's still not done. Like, they're still developing the game. Like, the mode of the game that I like the most is still in beta, which is kind of weird. It's fun. It's great, but it's clearly unfinished. But it's still super enjoyable. Expeditions Rome. I've been looking at the Expeditions series for a while. There's one about Vikings. There's one about conquistadors. But when they took it to Rome, I was like, I'm super excited about it. And then it came out on Game Pass, which meant I could play it for free, which was awesome. Really enjoyed that. More tactical battles, but also with this like strategic overview where you're managing a legion in battles, and it's kind of interesting and unique. But I would say, like, tipping this strategy crown, Midnight Suns. You have a bit of team management. You're developing cards and managing research. You can really tell it's made by the XCOM folks. It's got very like XCOM-esque level of detail to the non-battle parts. But the actual gameplay of the game is not at all what I was expecting. Like, you know, from the guys who made XCOM, awesome cover-based shooting and tactical team management. Well, you can't really think, like, you look at Spider-Man, you're like, Spider-Man is not going to hide behind a wall and jump out and shoot webs and then get behind the wall again. Yeah. So they kind of, like, ditched that in favor of this really, really deep card system where each hero has their own deck, and you need to like manage the decks of the three heroes you have in a battle against the opponents on the field, which may or may not include supervillains, and then the environment where there's all these, like, you know, things you can blow up, things you could drop on enemies, and how best to like bring all that together. And I really think they did an outstanding job. So that game would be my pick for strategy game of the year.
Okay. Marvel's Midnight Suns, Tony's strategy game of the year. Yeah, I think I'm going to have to give that a go at some point. All right. Yeah. That is it for our kind of individual awards that we've kind of picked here. Now we've got some joint awards and nominees. Moving into best looking game, I've got five games listed here. God of War Ragnarok, Horizon Forbidden West, Kirby and the Forgotten Land, The Callisto Protocol, and Mario and Rabbids Sparks of Hope.
Who put that on the list?
Guessing Jeff?
Maybe. I don't know. I was thinking about that. I'm like, I guess maybe that was me. But,
okay. So we don't have. Is there like strong?
It looks fine.
Yeah. Okay.
So, he was dead at the time.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that I was surprised when I saw it on there as well. I mean, it looks like it's a good looking Mario game, but it kind of looks like a Mario game, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, you can kind of say that about Kirby as well, but I thought Kirby is just a really great looking game. Like,
sure, I could definitely see an argument for that. The Callisto Protocol is very, it is very detailed in its visuals. It's not a pretty game, but it is, you know, visually stunning. Like, it is grimy. The space station looks phenomenal. Like, you just see the grime from the prison on the sides of like the walls and the textures there. But it doesn't have like the environmental look that the other three here have. So I don't know. Unless you guys are really strong about Kirby, I would if you're like, yeah, Kirby's fine.
I mean, I would cut that. This is God of War, is it not?
From what I've seen of it, I would give it to God of War.
Oh God, it's so beautiful.
It looks really fantastic.
Like Horizon has, I think Horizon has more detail, more variety in its environments.
Yeah.
I think Horizon looks phenomenal as well, but I don't really have a horse in this race, so.
I think when you get into like the details of the actual combat and how that stuff looks, I think that's where God of War kind of exceeds it.
I mean, my vote's for God of War. That's just based on footage of it. But it looks...
Sure.
Yeah.
Alright, so we good cutting Callisto here and for Horizon and Kirby are runners up, or
sure.
Or do we want to cut Kirby and?
I guess I haven't seen Callisto, but I do the performance issues with that detract from the visuals?
No, also, the fact that it's like corridors that you're walking through.
It is very much. It's not an open area, although Kirby is a lot of like.
Don't you dare!
As well.
Don't you dare!
It is. It is like it is. It is a small environment. It is not a 3D world that you're traversing. They're you know very cut, but they're you know artistically wonderful. No, Tony, the technical hiccups that Callisto had early on do not detract from how good it looks, okay. But.
That was just a question. I have not seen it myself, so I don't.
But I'm good cutting at there, and God of War is our winner as best looking.
Yeah.
All right.
This is the category I was interested.
But Jeff wins best looking podcast member. I'm just
thank you. Thank you.
All right.
This is the category I won't cut for.
What was that?
I said this is the category I want to see the bread for.
Oh,
yeah. The nominees.
That we're coming. I have strong feelings too about some of these.
So best retro themed game, new category we added this year, mostly because there was a lot of retro themed games that came out. We got a good selection of nominees here: Atari 50, the Anniversary Collection, TMNT, Shredder's Revenge, the Cowabunga Collection, Signalis, Pac-Man Museum Plus, Breakout Recharged, Missile Command Recharged, Infernax, Vampire Survivors, and Sonic Origins.
Before we start, and yeah. I probably should have thought of this ahead of time, I think we should split this into two.
I think we've gone down this road before about this.
Because I do think there's because the Collections and like for instance, Shredder's Revenge is a better game than Cowabunga Collection because it's an evolution of that. Yes. But I think it's hard to compare them. It's the same thing with if calling a spade, Vampire Survivors is probably going to win. But I think that's different than a best retro collection.
Sure, I mean, we've talked about splitting it before. I like lumping it together because sometimes you need the competition in the category.
I get that, but I think because there's so many this year that
not splitting it now. You're gonna have to fight it out, man. You're gonna have to give up one of those two fucking Ninja Turtles.
It's gonna be Shredder's Revenge. I'm gonna stick with. But I'm saying that because we have Shredder's Revenge, we have Vampire Survivors, we have Inferno Max.
Yeah, there's four collections here.
Yes, and then there's four kind of solo game, or five. So it would be easy to kind of split them off and split it evenly. But if Jeff wants to fight, we can fight about
let
it.
Let them fight.
easy cuts here. I added them on mostly because I wanted to give a space for them to kind of be able to be talked about. But the two Recharge games, Atari is doing phenomenal work with their Recharge games. Great soundtracks, great new gameplay, cool challenges all the way through. But I don't think they hold here against everything else. But just kind of wanted to call out that Atari's doing some really cool stuff with their games. And similarly, I think Tony would argue that Pac-Man Museum Plus is not a fun game on Xbox.
I think it's not good. I don't think it was very good at all.
It is a phenomenal collection when that game works, and it works great on PC. Like I played 50 hours of that game. I beat every single game, got every achievement. And it is a great collection outside, like when it is functionally playable. But on Xbox, it was not playable at all. So
no,
I'm cutting that as well. Which leaves us with seven. I think Atari 50 needs to be one of our top three here.
Atari 50 is my vote. And it's not particularly close between
it. Mine as well.
Yeah, so there you got. You got two votes for that. Yeah, anyone else? Could you guys come up with two votes for something else, or I feel like it takes it.
Well, no, because I think. I mean, I could. I get that's why I would spit it off because I think Vampire Survivor the much.
I know you
game.
Want. To do this.
Love that game. I'm playing it right now.
I think Vampire Survivors belongs there, and I think Shredder's Revenge belongs there as well.
I enjoy Vampire Survivors. I don't consider it retro. I consider it a new thing.
It's retro.
The book is retro. Yeah,
It's retro inspired, which is why I would say that it's better to separate it out because it is hard because it's not a retro game, but it's very much modeled after Castlevania, characters and weapons and stuff like that, while not being a Castlevania game. Period.
Yeah. But it's a new, there wasn't any game exactly like this back then. That's why I'm just I don't know.
Which is why I wanted to divide it out, because I do think it's hard to compare to an anniversary collection. So that is my thinking. So, yes, I do think it will be Shredder's Revenge and Vampire Survivor and Atari 50. Now it's the order that matters.
Well, we got two for Atari 50. We got two votes as that's what it should be. So I think that takes it right there. Unless again, you and Tony want to team up for Survivors or something then we have to hash it out, right? You know,
All right. So we're cutting Sonic Origins here. It's a good collection of Sonic games, but it's also the 17th collection of Sonic games. Cowabunga Collection, excellent collection of those old Turtles games. Signalis is a phenomenal PlayStation 1 era type survival horror game that
I played it for 10 minutes, didn't grab me.
Really, I loved every second of it. I thought it was phenomenal, but
couldn't get out of the first room.
Oh, really?
And therefore,
so you never even met, you never even came up with the enemies or got weapons. That's, you couldn't get out of the first room.
Nope. And
thought it was, wow. Were you drunk?
Yeah, probably.
Fair enough. And Infernax is a cool like Simon's Quest type Castlevania type game. That love Jeff it. And I both really liked.
I love it, but Atari 50 is something special.
All right, so there's our top three: Atari 50, TMNT, Shredder's Revenge, and Vampire Survivors. But Jeff and I very strongly feel about Atari 50. Where do you guys fall?
Gotta make a vote, make a stand, Earl.
I was gonna say the big problem for me is I've not played Atari 50, so I don't have strong feelings about it.
No, that's fine, but you gotta choose between your Shredder and your Vampire Survivors.
Oh, well, I'm gonna pick Shredder's Revenge. I mean, that is not that's, I mean, I said, yeah.
Then we gotta see where Tony's at. Then we gotta see where the stands.
Tony, master of retro gaming.
So my argument for Atari 50 is like it is like the pinnacle of those collections. It is kind of what you like. You know, we have other collections on here: Sonic, Pac-Man, Cowabunga, and none of them have the level of like history and you know, record keeping that Atari 50 has. Like
it's like a museum exhibit. Yeah. Like it's
so awesome. With games, like an interactive museum exhibit. Like
play these games. With design documents, tidbits, history, video, tons of like documentary video. And on top of it, you get new versions of a lot of these games. A lot of games suck, but that's not the package as a whole is just so raising the bar for what a collection could be, that it has to be it for me. Like I just really enjoyed my couple of days going through that.
How are you, Tony?
I mean, Tony's getting another beer. I got a nice St. Jacob's Bourbon Barrel Aged Imperial Stout. You guys know that I don't really play retro games, so I really don't consider my opinion to be valid on this particular one. So
I know, but you played the other two.
I mean, yes, I have played both Shredder's Revenge and Vampire Survivors, and I really enjoy both of those games quite a bit.
You also really like history.
I do. I'm a big supporter of history. However, I really don't care about the Atari collection. Like it doesn't speak. Yeah. It doesn't even when I was like at the age where I could have played those games, I did not. So I don't really have a whole lot of. Whereas I have a huge history with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, having played all of those games. So I think I have to stand behind Earl on this one.
All right, so we got a 50-50 split. And now it becomes, I don't know. I feel like me and Chris made our case for Atari. I don't know. Why do you guys think Shredder's Revenge should win over Atari?
Again, that's why the problem is like it's apples and oranges. Because I imagine that, like, I'm hoping Shredder's Revenge is a better game because it's a modern game.
Right.
Okay, but here we are. You gotta play the game that we're playing here.
No, I get
it. I know you want to change it. I know you think it's not fair, but.
What I'm saying is, like, because, yes, if it's based off of the quality of the game, Shredder's Revenge takes it easy. It's a better game because it's a modern game. It has those sensibilities. It is not it's not a collection of 40-year-old games, no matter how good they are still dated.
Chris, you have thoughts on that?
I mean, that they are. A lot of them are dated. I think the games like Centipede and Missile Command still hold up really well.
I'd rather play those than a beat 'em up. I mean, I hear what you're saying, Earl, but in my opinion, this genre is also dated. Like, they did a great update on it. They honored what those games were. But, again, like, for me, that's another problem for me, too. It's like, with Shredder's Revenge, I was like, it's fine. Like, I didn't like it as much as you guys. Yeah,
you just don't like
that genre is, it's dead to me. Like, it's, there's good examples. That's a good example of it. The recent Streets of Rage was a good example of it, but I don't know. I'd rather play Missile Command, to be honest with you, or Breakout, you know?
And a peed.
But I hear you. I mean, Earl makes a strong case saying, like, as a game, it plays better than probably 90% of the stuff in Atari 50.
True.
It's tough. Chris, you're going to have to somehow save us here if we were to get out of this with Atari 50.
I mean, I am fine with it just being here, and I'm not really going to, like, pull out knives over the best retro-themed game. There are other ones. It is a very strong category. I think we've made the right call in the three games.
Okay.
Here.
So you're willing to concede then?
I think there are bigger fights to have later.
Sure. I'm not going to win those fights either, though.
You may win some of them. You never know.
Let's see.
So TMNT, oh, Shredder's Revenge,
our best retro theme game.
So speaking of one that maybe you can make a strong argument for, Jeff, here's best soundtrack score. It's another category I don't have a whole lot of stake in here. Mario and Rabbids, Sparks of Hope, Elden Ring, TMNT, Shredder's Revenge, and Sonic Frontiers.
Yeah.
I like the two, like, vocal songs from TMNT, Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah.
And like, you know, the obviously the original
theme song cover.
Theme song, yeah. Like, I think it's good. Outside of that, I can't tell you what the music was in that game.
It sounded like a 90s arcade game.
Yeah. Yes. Like, it works perfectly, right? But it's
okay,
like, it's like memorable.
I'm going to throw my cards on the table. My vote is for Shredder's Revenge.
Okay.
Sometimes I have a really strong, let's say we had a Sayonara Wild Hearts this year, I would be fucking fighting you guys to the death for it. I think like Shredder's Revenge is the closest we come to something like that, where it's like, yeah, new original songs for it that were awesome, and it really did a good job of doing that 90s arcade sound. Now, me personally, I probably lean towards Elden Ring out of all of these, but it's like, I have other fights with Elden Ring that I want to go. And I do think Shredder's Revenge is like a really good pick in this category. I don't think there's a much stronger, you know, Sonic always has great music. The Mario and Rabbids music is good, but Shredder's Revenge felt like, in the music category, it felt like it was doing something special.
Are we good with Shredder's Revenge winning here? What's our two runners up? Like, what are we cutting off of this list then?
Well, this is not hard. I guess I'd cut. I'll let you guys figure this one out.
The only other game here that I played was Elden Ring. So, and I think
the
music
is
fitting.
Yeah.
It's not like, I'm like, oh my god, I want to like listen to that soundtrack, but
yeah.
I did listen to the Shredder's Revenge soundtrack.
Yeah. There you go. I mean, I think that's an easy. We already said that's going to be the winner for this category.
Yeah. So our
and given Earl wins left and right here.
If we keep if we keep Elden Ring on it, are we cutting Mario and Rabbids or Sonic Frontiers?
I'd cut Mario and Rabbids. I think the Sonic Frontiers music is really good.
Okay. I mean, you and Earl both played Sonic, so
yeah. I will. I mean, it doesn't matter. My connection won. I will just say, as I noted last week, I enjoyed the score. I mean, again, hugely unbiased when it comes to Ninja Turtles, but I enjoyed the score. I did pick it up on vinyl. And mostly because of the vocal tracks. And I think the thing for me in particular is that with vocal tracks, I don't like, sometimes it's very hard to get vocal tracks in games because gaming is so dynamic. Where I think it worked with Turtles because like the levels they're on in particular tend to be kind of on rails. Yeah. So the song doesn't get repetitious. And yes, it is mostly for but there are some really good actual level scores as well. But it is mostly for the covers of not the covers. the cover of the theme song is also really good. But it's like one of those theme songs that's ingrained in my head. So it is still weird when it's not the people singing it from the original game. I mean, original TV show. Because I guess I think not last year, maybe last year, when, no, 2021. I spent, I think, a month and a half that summer rewatching the entire original series. And the fact that I watched nearly 200 episodes of a show and did not get tired, I still listened to the theme song out after that. Just told me it was, and I thought they did a really good job of, I mean, much like the game, of modernizing it, but still making it feel very familiar.
All right. Best Game Pass discovery. I'm going to run through the nominees here, and then I want to clarify what we're going for here. So here's the nominees: Nobody Saves the World, Power Wash Simulator, Vampire Survivors, Paparazzi, Rainbow Six Extraction, Tinykin, Expeditions Rome, and Total War Warhammer 3. All right, so the only thing I just want to clarify before we debate what is our top three and winner here is, are we saying that this is because of Game Pass we discovered the game, or because of Game Pass we played the game? Because I think the bottom two here, Tony,
I would have never found those games. Never, yeah. Never, ever.
Well, that's what I want. It's like Rainbow Six, pretty big series. Expeditions Rome,
I already knew about it. Yeah.
And Warhammer 3, huge game. Like,
yes. Yeah.
I would say from this podcast, I would say it's Tinykin, Vampire Survivor, and Power Wash. Because I think because those were games not only that I think we discovered via Game Pass, but it was games that we all discovered and recommended, and then other people played because it was on Game Pass and enjoyed.
You guys are all welcome for Vampire Survivors, by the way. Just throwing it out there.
just to clarify that, Walt did play it first.
Yeah, but I don't listen to Walt. I didn't hear about it. There's a part of me that kind of leans towards Tinykin just because I would have maybe tried out Vampire Survivors because if it was a paid game, because it got so much buzz.
And I mean, it's a paid game.
Didn't I beg you to play Tinykin? Didn't that happen?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Would I have, done that without it being on Game Pass? I don't know. And it ended up being one of my favorite games, so... For me personally, it's Tinykin. I guess if you guys wanted to go Vampire Survivor or whatever the fuck, your stupid Power Wash fucking game.
What's wrong with Power Wash Simulator? Do you not hate being clean?
I have not played it, so I can't really
talk fun.
About it. It just sounds so stupid.
It is so stupid. It is like absolutely stupid, Jeff. But
that's
is,
kind
like,
of what fun. That's kind of what I think of when I think of Game Pass discoveries. Is it's a game that I don't know if we would have tried it.
Buy a Power Wash Simulator. Yes. Never.
I'll let you guys hash this category out.
Well, no, I think Tinykin is also up there. I think to Jeff's point, I think Vampire Survivor would have been a game we would have tried eventually because it has gotten so much positive buzz.
$5.
Yeah.
And it's cheap enough that it's like, yeah, I would have.
I went to go buy it on the Switch after I started playing it, and I was like, oh, fuck, why is this not on the Switch?
Yeah, if you guys have been like, oh, man, you got to play this $5 game, like, whatever, it's $5. Like, But I think it belongs here. Like, we kind of did discover it because
I would have never played it. If it was not on gameplay, this is not the type of game that I play ever.
All right, so I'm going to cut these, leaving us with the three we were just talking about: Power Wash, Vampire Survivors, and Tinykin. Where do we feel like I am fine with any of the three here? So Jeff is leaning Tinykin.
I lean Tinykin, but I'm being serious. I'll let you guys decide.
I mean, I think Vampire Survivors is the best game on this list.
That's fair. I think that is accurate.
I don't agree, but again, this is one where I'm like,
I think it's the best game on the list, but I will say, because I do think so much of the positive buzz would have, I think some of us would have tried it because of the positive buzz. Like, it's more like it was accessible on Game Pass and not necessarily, I mean, I know Walt played it, but I don't know if he discovered it via Game Pass or if it was just like,
he did. He did.
Okay.
He absolutely did.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, we at least knew about Vampire Survivors before Game Pass. Like, we'd heard about it back when it came out. We did, I think, as Tony said, we might not have played it without Game Pass, but I think we knew about it. Tinykin was something that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And same with Power Wash Simulator, but that's probably the weakest of the three here, even though I had a ton of fun with it. I'm fine with either Vampire Survivors or Tinykin. Wherever you guys land.
Even though I updated, I would nominate, I would so back Tinykin.
Sounds like it's Tinykin and then Vampire Survivors and Power Wash.
Sounds good.
Works for me.
It's a good three there. All right, what died in 2022? Babylon Falls, Google Stadia, Betty White.
I don't know who.
Why are we mocking Betty White? I don't think she's a video game character.
I don't think we're mocking her.
I don't think I was the one that put her there. It wasn't me.
It wasn't me.
I may have put her there just in, like, trying to find something to put there, and then the rest of it filled in.
Yeah.
Ghostwire Tokyo, Final Fantasy The First Soldier, Metroid Prime HD, and Madden. And I did have to check if we were talking about John Madden or just Madden the series. It's Madden the series. John Madden died last year.
Well, Madden the series was because, was that the, because I assume this is because, technically, I guess it died in 2023, that bug that like wiped out people's franchise mode?
I mean, my hopes and dreams for Madden being a good game going forward all died this year, so.
Yeah, I wonder. Like, have sales decline on it? Is like the general.
No, that's the annoying part, is that sales are still really good.
But, like, is the general public feel the same way you do about it in terms of it being so broken and shit?
No, that's
right. Or is it just like more like you, how you feel about it? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what was like the fan reaction to the new
Madden? The Reddit hates Madden. This year's Madden was particularly bad. I saw that is as close as I know to the actual fan reaction. It's
if you went on the Madden board, it's negative for
them. It's negative. Oh, it's certainly negative.
I'm almost willing to back you on this. Just to fucking,
it is shocking to me.
Fucking the shit up, man.
It is shocking to me that a game like this that makes so much money every year and is played by so many people and like gets advertised during fucking pro football games is so broken. Like,
yeah, I want to give it this Razzie because of that. Because I think that,
like that the bug with the save files was like the crowning moment. It's like, oh, the game is like everything is broken, all of it. Like, and like if you managed to like get through a game and finish it and it worked and the great awesome, now that's gone too. Ha 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 ha.
And it's been kind of like a consistent downhill. Like, I think,
yeah,
for like the last two or three years, like you've noted, or I've noted points where it's like, this is bad. It is broken. Like, my guy is purple. Like,
yeah.
And this year just absolutely hard. I think it belongs there.
Yeah. This is still a category, but I kind of want to give it to that.
Well, I think the winner has to be Stadia, because anytime a major, okay, I'm not gonna say,
okay, it wasn't major, that. Nobody played it. Like, to die, you also have to live.
Well,
and I'm not sure Stadia ever did.
I did play Stadia.
I own a Stadia. I mean, because, well, Google was giving them away constantly.
Yes. Honestly, I think Babylon Falls belongs on this. That game came out this year, and what was in like within months they were like, and it's dead now, we're done, no more support,
yeah,
we're killing the game.
That's very fast.
I'm not sure Ghostwire belongs on here. The understanding that Ghostwire was a game died this year. I think like we just it came out and nobody talked about it. But I'm not sure that it
like, died in the same way.
Yeah. It's dramatically. Like it was just forgotten. Metroid Prime HD, Jeff.
I think funny. That's more of a rumor.
I think we should put it on there just because it's funny. But I don't care.
That rumor didn't die, though.
The rumor never dies. The rumor never dies. It came up again a couple days ago.
It's back up again. So.
And it's like, it's just, why do you have to put me through this over and over and over again? Like, either do it or don't. And it's not even Nintendo's fault. It's these fucking
geekers speculators. Yeah, they just keep telling you what's out there, Jeff, and then it doesn't show up. I'm
sick of it. Like, just give me the game or not.
Nintendo's ready to announce it any moment now. They're just waiting for the right moment for the Star Sign.
I'm gonna cut Metroid, Jeff.
Funny.
I don't know. I'm gonna cut Final Fantasy: The First Soldier as well. Do you guys even know what that was?
I have no idea what that is.
Okay. It was a game that was announced by Square last year, launched this year. It was in 2022. It was a mobile Fortnite like, so it's a battle royale where you play as Final Fantasy characters and run around. And they killed it within 6 months. They're like, we're done now. I don't think you can download it on the App Store anymore. Similar to Babylon Falls, which was another Square game, but that was way more high profile. So I think that kind of belongs on our list more. Are we saying Madden wins this?
I want to give it to Madden. I think it's get your act together.
I'm supporting Stadia. I mean, I'm not supporting Stadia, but you know.
Again, I go to my argument. To have died, you have to actually have lived. And I don't know that Stadia was ever an idea that ever had the support that it could actually succeed. We were just waiting for what happened to happen.
That's how Google does things.
That is very much how Google does things. That is why the notion of Stadia was so fascinating at the time. It's like, because you kill everything.
Yes, why are you wasting this money? What is happening?
All right, so Madden, Tony's hopes and dreams for it have died. Followed by Google Stadia and Babylon Falls.
Okay.
All right. This is a packed category coming up here.
This is a category I came up with, and I love the category, but I also could not choose between any of the fucking like 8 things I nominated.
The best weapon. There's a lot going on here. Leviathan Axe from God of War Ragnarok. The Spike Thrower from Horizon Forbidden West. The King Bible from Vampire Survivors. Not the best.
Yeah, who nominated that, Jeff?
God damn it. I'll explain that. That's fucking A-tier fucking... Well, wow. All right, anyway.
Rivers of Blood from Elden Ring. Meteoric Ore Blade from Elden Ring. Sacred Relic Sword from Elden Ring. The Comet... Is that... Comet Azure, Jeff?
I'm kind of combining two weapons or spells into one there. Comet/Comet Azure.
Okay, so that also from Elden Ring. Swarm of Flies from Elden Ring. The Bloody Tear from Vampire Survivors.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Unholy Vespers from Vampire Survivors. No Future from Vampire Survivors. And the Faragi from Vampire Survivors. What were you going to say, Tony?
Jeff needs to eliminate at least 12 of these.
Well, they were all him. I nominated the last 4 from Vampire Survivors on there.
Well, I guess I start with the King Bible because I don't understand. Yeah, at first it's like weak because it just does a little circle around you. It's basically a thing that like circles around you and you know hits the enemies. Like it's a little Bible, and then it multiplies, and you get 2, and then you get 3, and it'll last for a couple seconds, and it'll go away, and then it'll come back, last for a couple seconds. But as you level it up, soon you have like a bunch of Bibles around you, and when you evolve it completely, it's like it's constantly circling you. You have a bubble around you constantly. So I don't know why you guys would say like,
well, that's why the red and black bubble, which is a different weapon because you need to evolve it, is the Unholy Vespers. And I think that is way better than the King Bible.
Yeah, okay. I also think the cross is better than the King Bible.
I use the cross with the King Bible. I use them both, baby.
Well, you can use like six or seven at a time. Yeah, six like, weapons, yeah.
Like, there's certain ones that...
If you're offering me like one to choose, like... I am not starting with the Bible, because the Bible is like the least effective weapon to hit things with. You go with the cross, and then when you evolve the cross, it basically got like lightsabers like flying across the screen, eliminating like six or seven enemies every second. Like, I mean, the cross is just way better.
Well,
but if you give me like the number one starting weapon, give me the garlic. I want my fucking garlic.
Garlic is very good. I've actually like so. And when I started playing Tony, that was exactly how I was. Like, I want the garlic because like it creates like that aura around you. Any of the starting enemies, they just walk into and die. You can and you gain experience and you can get more weapons that way. I like as I've played more. It's like I'm building towards what the evolution does. So like the bloody tear, which is the whip, the unholy vespers, which is the Bible, no future, which is the rune tracer, and the Faragi, which is the guns. Have you guys got the guns?
Oh,
there's a pair of guns that one of the characters starts with, and you he actually starts with two weapons when you start. And you get the passive item, the Tirigusu, which gives you an extra revive. And you combine them, and you evolve it, and it creates this, like, it's basically four guns in one. And it creates this, like, orb that just, like, shoots out and kills everything in its range. It's awesome. So like yeah, like as I played more, it's like what am I building towards? Not like what's the cool starting weapon? Because like yeah. You can evolve like within like the first 10 minutes if you're building properly. But anyway, we can eliminate some stuff there. But Jeff, you can't have like 14 Elden Ring weapons on here.
So. I can't choose. Love all my babies.
All right, well, you need to at least explain to us what some of these are, because we have no idea.
Rivers of Blood is a katana that has nice reach on it, and being a katana, it is fast, and the Rivers of Blood also does blood loss buildup, which is, Chris, you've run into those little imps that attack you in the catacombs.
Yes.
You ever notice that makes a red bar fill up when they're attacking you? Like... on the like bottom of the screen.
Similar to the green bar that fills up when you get poisoned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's blood loss buildup. That bar fills up, you lose a huge chunk of your health and blood loss. Now, this weapon does that to the enemies. It is, for probably at least six months the game was out, it was the weapon to get. It was the weapon everyone wanted. People would ask you to trade for it because... in the game itself, you can't get it until late in the game, and you have to beat up one of those very hard red invader guys to get it. So that was like the weapon. Now, my opinion is this weapon I just found on this last few playthroughs called the Meteoric Ore Blade. It's basically the same thing as that, but it does magic damage as well.
So it does the blood damage and the magic.
And magic damage, and it scales with intelligence. So you don't have to, like, you know, with the swords, you typically have to, like, level up strength to make them, you know. You can level up the sword itself, but when you're leveling up your character, you know, that can affect with it. And, you know, with the Meteoric Ore Blade, it scales with intelligence, so you don't have to worry about it. Does all of the things that Rivers of Blood does. Like, nobody... I just don't get... For me, this is the dark horse. Nobody talked about this fucking weapon. I found it randomly. I don't even remember where I found it. And I'm like, this thing is the best weapon in the game, almost.
So it does everything Rivers... It doesn't have as cool of a name, but...
It might not have the reach... that Rivers of Blood. I'm trying to figure out how it's not as good as Rivers of Blood. I'm sure Sean will like be yelling at us as he listens to this part of the podcast.
All right, so let's hold. I'm going to cut Rivers of Blood since you think it's better than that.
I think.
Um, Tell us about the Sacred Relic Sword. What makes that so good?
That is a sword that if you press the left trigger, it shoots out a wave of gold that covers like everything in front of you and kills everything in front of you. That is the only drawback to that sword is you get it for beating the final boss, so you can't use it until after you've beaten the final boss. But yeah, obviously, pretty good
sword. Wait, a weapon that you can't use until you've beaten the what?
And then you go in and play. Like you go do and you new play game more. Plus. Yeah,
you can like, do new game plus, or you could continue to play the game. Like there's going to be things that you have not done that lets you just continue to stay in your world if you want.
Okay, so it's like, you know, like when you finish Fallout or whatever.
I hate it with games like Assassin's Creed is the same way. It's like, here's this really awesome blade at the end. Like, but I'm fucking done. Well, why are you giving me this now? I don't want it now.
Think of guys like me that are going to keep playing. It's a cool thing to get. It's basically, I only really use it at my farming spot because there's like 30 guys sitting there that are all asleep. And I just press the left trigger and get 100,000 fucking runes. Like, I like easily level, like, even though now it takes me about 450,000 runes to level up, I could do that pretty quickly with this sword.
I mean, that sounds cool. We can hold that for a moment. Tell us about Comet.
Comet is like going to become your main if you stay as a spellcaster. So that's, I had to like give it some props here because it's just a big, thick magic, like, you know, comet. That it has some tracking, so when people like when you're, you know, these bosses run around and dodge and shit too,
and like, it's like a home track. Beacon.
Yeah. So, and it's just like, you know, Chris, if you get to the second level of the game, it's in there for you, and it'll become your main. Like if you're a spellcaster, it'll be your main. Comet Azure is just that, but it's a constant stream. I'm sure you've seen me do it when you summon me, like. I'm just like shooting this thick stream of blue shit. Could really just kill an entire boss if they don't move around a lot, like very easily.
Swarm of flies.
This is like, I don't see people talk about this one enough. So you know how we talked about blood loss buildup? This is an incantation, so not a spell, but you know, it's like the other type of spell you could do. An incantation where you shoot out a swarm of flies. It has insane tracking. It's just a swarm of flies. They're going to follow the fucking person wherever they go, and these flies do blood loss. So you just go, and they also take very little of your blue bar up to shoot them. So I'm just like, on one blue bar, shoot like 10 times these flies. And also, like you just see them bugging the boss, like just eating away at him. And also, you just see a big chunk of fucking health come off the boss. I don't know why people don't talk about swarm of flies, other than the fact that like it's kind of in a hidden spot in the game, but it is a cool fucking incantation.
I've cut your Bible and I've modified the four that I put down below, Jeff.
As their base versus
base and their evolution. So whip and the bloody tear, and the whip is like your first starting weapon that you get. And whip the bloody sucks. once it evolves to the bloody tear, you're then gaining back 8 health every time. Oh. It's like a constant, it's constantly replenishing your health. And then with like some of the other buffs and stuff, you can get it. So it basically goes like 16 or 32. You basically become invincible with it when you evolve the whip. So it's pretty cool. The Bible on Holy Vespers, as Jeff said, the Bible circles around. I don't like it as much as Jeff does early on, like that one circling around.
Oh, but that's I get it as soon as I can, so I can get it evolved. Like,
yeah, and I think like you, I also think you need the duplicator with it, so then you end up with like 2 or 4. And by the time you get to like level 7 or 8 with the Bible, you have like basically a constant string around.
Yeah. There. Pretty legit.
But the way of once you evolve that into Unholy Vespers, it just becomes this like ring of black and red death. It's nonstop. It's pretty cool. The Rune Tracer and New Future. The Rune Tracer is similar to the Magic Wand, where it shoots out a rune and it'll bounce around off shit. Once you get it up to the No Future, which is the evolution, it becomes an explosive. So it's like shooting out eight of those, like, you know, runes at a time, and it's bouncing all around. And then when it hits something, it explodes. So you have like fireworks going off all over the place. And you basically have like eight grenades that shoot out from you every like 3 seconds. So I think that one's pretty cool. And then the guns, which evolved to the Furagi, are pretty cool.
I need these guns. I need them.
Yeah. I think it's a character that you get from, have you unlocked any of the coffins?
No.
On level. So if you get the map, you bring it up and there'll be a question mark on the map. And if you travel to the question mark on the map, there will be a coffin. You have to fight a boss, which isn't very difficult. Like, especially if you're like 10 or 12 minutes in, you fight the boss, you can then touch the coffin and a character will jump out. It'll go like, "Your vampire is in another castle, but thank you for rescuing me," or something like that. And then you have a new character in your character select, and that I think that guy has one of those guys has the guns. And when they start off, it's a red and blue. If you have both guns, and any character can get individual guns, but you'd have to build it up separately. If you're playing as this character, you get both guns to start, and it's red and blue shots, like if you're playing a shoot 'em up. So it's just like a bullet hell type thing. But you're the bullet hell, and you just have an X of bullets coming out.
Did I dream this? Like, I thought one of the trailers for Vampire Survivors is like, "Become the bullet hell." Like
I mean, that guy
that's
is
kind of what like, the game. That's yes. what the game is, kind of like. Yeah, that's so cool.
And yeah, so, yeah, and then the Furagi. Once you upgrade that, then it has like this holy aura around you, and it shoots out white beams of light in like a clock fashion, and it's really hard for anything to hit you. It's a really cool weapon. Tony, I'm guessing you put the other two on here.
I did.
The Leviathan Axe and the Spike Thrower. Tell us about those.
I mean, we all, the Leviathan Axe, I mean, basically you have this axe that, you know, was Kratos' wife's axe, as you discover in the new game. So it has a lot of meaning for him, but like they designed so much of the game around the axe physics, like all of these things where you can unlock stuff by hitting these things in a certain order with the axe, and like watching it ricochet, and the fact that you can pull it back. I mean, it's like Thor's. It's very. I mean, it's the same as it was in the first game.
Okay, I was going to ask that question because that was a fucking amazing weapon.
Yes, but it's a great, great weapon, and I think they do some stuff here with it that's really cool, and they've like built more mechanics around it, and I think it's super fun. But it is like super similar to the first game.
Okay.
And what about the spike thrower?
So you always see when you're looking at Aloy from Horizon, they always show her with the bow. But in this game, she gets this throwing spear, which they call a spike thrower, which is kind of a misnomer. You kind of think of something that shoots spikes, but it's not what it is. So it's basically this spear that you can charge up and throw, and then it does something based on what type of spike it is. So it either like it generates a pulse, it explodes, it like blows part of whatever it hits off, and it does huge damage compared to the bow. And when you get really good with it, it's super cool to take this spike and like hit one of the flying enemies like in midair and watch it just blow up. It's just a fun weapon, and I think it's more fun than the other weapons in Horizon.
When do you get that?
It's pretty early.
I wonder if I got it and just never equipped it.
Yeah, you probably did.
Sounds awesome.
It's so much fun. There are points at which I'm like, I don't really need a bow for this fight. We're gonna put that away.
All right, there's way too much from Elden Ring here and Vampire Survivors. I think think the spike thrower sounds really cool. It should maybe belong here. Leviathan Axe is great, but
it's been around.
Just because it's not new.
Yeah.
And it's not best new weapon, but you know, it's like what was the cool weapon that we liked this year? Leviathan Axe is just ever. It's awesome all the times.
So. Yeah.
Jeff, what can we cut from Elden Ring?
I so can't choose from mine. I wanted to give them their due. Is there one that you guys thought sounded cool? That would be the one, I guess. I don't know. Like, I love the Vampire Survivor ones too.
I think I'm very much with not that it's not cool, but I think I'm very much with Tony that like when they give you like that cool, awesome weapon at the end of the game, it just kind of pisses me off.
Well, if you get there, you'll love it for leveling up. But yeah, I would take that off. Sacred Relic Sword, yeah.
And I think I love the whip, but I think there's other ones there from Vampire Survivors that are better. I don't know.
This is a fun category. It's fun to talk about these weapons, but it's so hard to choose. They're all like, I don't know, all these things that are left out here sound fucking cool, man.
What was the swarm of flies again?
It's an incantation that you shoot out, and it shoots out a literal swarm of flies that track forever. Like, you cannot escape them, and they build up blood loss, so eventually a huge chunk of your health falls off. And nobody talks about it. It's, like, the most amazing thing.
I mean, it's an awesome name.
And it is an awesome name, yeah.
If you saw
someone using it, you'd be like, what is this? Because it looks like you're just shooting disease out from you, like this red disease. but it's literally a swarm of flies.
I kind of think we gotta, like, I think that has to be the Elden
Ring. All right.
Sounds pretty cool. How do you guys feel about these three? I really like the guns. It's kind of like one of the ones that, like, now that's what I always go for. I always try to set myself up to get both guns. But you guys haven't played with the guns, so
right.
I'm willing to cut that. How do you guys feel about it? Like, Jeff's very strong about the Bible. He loves the Bible.
I just don't like the Bible at all. He does, which is surprising, Jeff. I'm really shocked.
It's usually not my thing, but. I'll let you guys hash this out, because the next category I'm going to fight strong for.
I mean, you could fight all you want there.
All right.
I wrote the first thing in there, so.
Wow, all right.
I don't care. Tony, do you have a preference here? I know you're not like a fan of the Bible, but I don't know. Have you upgraded the Bible? Have you evolved?
I have not evolved the Bible, so I don't really have a.
If you play with it, even without it completely evolved, like as it goes on, it becomes.
No, I detest it without it being evolved, which is why I haven't evolved it.
Oh, okay.
I do think that do you like try to grab the duplicator?
I do.
Yeah, because I think the duplicator makes the Bible at least on like level 7 or 8, like.
There's also like a permanent level up you could do that's basically the duplicator. So then you start with a duplicator plus you get the duplicator. Yeah, dude. I love the duplicator when you just have. I have a set thing, like I get the same weapons every time, at least with this one main character that I have, like the main guy. And it's like seeing all the knives flying out of me and crosses and fucking all this shit with the duplicator shit. Like it's just like insane. Anyway,
I kind of like the duplicator. Let's put the duplicator in there.
The duplicator.
I mean, I'm
fucked. Now we're adding more.
That's not a weapon, but.
But it's like, it's the thing that makes all the other weapons great.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. Like, Earl, do you have a strong opinion here?
Oh, I don't. I'm okay with whatever.
All right, duplicator. Make it happen.
All right, there we go. All right, and what's our winner here?
Don't all speak at once.
Yeah, right. I got really quiet.
I mean, I like the idea of shooting disease out of you.
That causes that's blood loss.
That's a statement.
I mean, it's a category that Elden Ring can actually win. So
it's a game with a ton of weapons, and it's really hard to choose, but I think that's like an unsung one. Do it up.
All right. Let's move on. Swarm of Flies winning as best weapon with Spike Thrower and the Duplicator. Duplicator is great. It's just a phenomenal like a passive item that does make all your weapons better. So, all right, best boss fight. Mine is not a serious nominees. It was all boss fight sucks.
I mean, I could win.
Okay, yeah, maybe unstrike that. Here we got Shredder, the Chrome Dome, General. Was it Radon?
General Radon.
General Radon and the God, the Devouring Serpent, Rykard,
Lord of Blasphemy.
That is a name and a half. Earl, Chrome Dome. Is that the one where you're fighting the guy who's like in the control tower and you have to throw the?
I thought that was Shredder. I was gonna say I didn't put the Ninja Turtles fights on here.
So I did. It was okay. Me.
Okay.
Which one's Chrome Dome?
Chrome Dome. So I like Chrome Dome because that's the one where you fight him and he jumps out of the battle. And then you see him like punching at you, and you have to throw the foot soldier at the screen.
Yes, that's what I like that one. Yes.
That is probably my favorite boss fight of the year.
I really do like that one. That one's pretty cool.
I was gonna say the only thing is like because that's just a homage to the fight from Turtles in Time.
Yes,
sure. I mean, but most of that game is.
But yeah, right? it is a fun boss battle. I assume when you say Shredder, you mean Shredder, not Super Shredder, because Super Shredder is a pain in the ass.
Yes.
Super Shredder is not a fun boss battle.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I remember the Super Shredder boss battle, because it is a pain in the ass.
You fight Shredder in the lab, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I think he runs away. Coward.
That one is not resonating with me.
Yes.
Yeah. Chrome Dome, though. Like, that one was awesome. Jeff.
Yeah.
Tell us about these two that we probably will never see.
I have a very strong like number one pick, but I guess I'll just I wanted to honor the other one because I saw it's pretty neat too. So I'll start with that, and that's God Devouring Serpent / Rykard Lord of Blasphemy. Now this is like a giant snake like creature who has devoured a god named Rykard, and you fight this giant serpent, and it's really cool because when you enter the arena, there's just like a serpent spear, like there's like a weapon like laying there, and you have to pick it up and use it. It's a gimmick boss. Like every one of their games has like one gimmick boss where it's like if you just do the thing you're supposed to do, then it becomes super easy, kind of like a Zelda game or something. So if you just pick up that serpent's spear and then like equip it, it's like really easy to beat this boss. You don't even have to level up the spear. But you kill him, you think he's dead, and then he rises up, his health bar fills up completely again. He turns around and you see the god's face on the back of the snake's neck, and then he pulls a fucking sword out of his mouth, and it's on to round two. And pretty cool. But not as cool as General Radon. So this is a boss fight that's like maybe one third of the way through the game. It's like after the second big level. And it feels like honestly, the first time I played the game, I thought it was the final boss fight. Because it just felt like a final boss fight. It felt so epic. It felt like when you fight Ganon at the end of like Breath of the Wild or something. Like, first of all, the arena is not an arena. It's like a giant, vast desert. Like, it's so big that this boss fight lets you ride around on your horse in the boss fight, right? So you're in this giant desert. There's this fucking boss way far away across the map. It takes like at least a minute to get to him, and he's shooting shit at you. And all over the ground are all these like gold signs, like to summon like someone to help you. Except there's like a bunch of them, and it's basically everyone you've met in the game so far. You could summon like all the NPCs. You could summon, and you all gang up together and go running at this boss and fucking fight him.
You can summon
that's the coolest shit fucking ever.
You can summon all of them. So like the
yes, there's like weird there's wizard like, and you're rolling in fucking like 10 deep to go fight this boss. And
do you cool. need to be 10 deep?
It's like you don't need to. No, you could just try to go on your own. Like one of the early like because this is a boss like every boss in their games like they seem very scary and like you're not gonna beat them at first. He's really not. But when I was first fighting him, I was like looking up guides, and the guide like early guides were saying like you don't really have to fight him at all. All you should be doing is riding around on your horse and make sure to keep summoning. Because once he kills these things you summon, you can summon them again. You can find their sign again, summon them again.
You don't even need to fight them. You just like
technically you cannot, but I would recommend fighting them. The other cool thing about him, there's one other thing. Like halfway through the fight, he'll just jump up and disappear. You're like, where the fuck is he? Like, where'd he go? And you look in the sky. He comes flying out of the sky as like a comet, like an asteroid fucking hitting the earth. Like if you're like standing where he lands, you're probably gonna die, and that's like you're already halfway through the fight. But just everything about it, like everything I just described, dude, like it just the epic. It feels more like a final boss fight than the final boss fight in the game because you're just like, this is so cool. Every person I've ran into and talked to in the game, like they're like joining me to go fucking kill this guy. Like I literally thought it was the end of the game, but it's not. It's only the third of the way.
Trying to find I found an image. I was trying to find an image to share, but it won't let me save it for whatever reason. He looks pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll fight to the death for this one. If you guys aren't convinced after hearing that, like I don't
know. I mean, it sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Is it cooler than Chrome Down? I don't know.
I think it is. I think it's one of my favorite boss. I think it's the coolest boss fight in the game in terms of the concept of it. Like, you know, cause even the thought of just being able to ride your horse in a big boss fight is wild to me. But you have so many other things on top of that. Give it to Radahn. You know you want to give it to Radahn.
I'll give it to you. I got nothing to fight for.
I'm not opposed to it. I can't remember Shredder. The first Shredder fight, but
you're a boss fight hater apparently.
I'm not a huge fan of boss fights.
They are an old school method of game design that I feel.
And the game Jeff loves the most. Boss fights the game. I kind of like that serpent thing as a second.
Sounds pretty cool, right? He pulls a fucking sword out of his mouth, man.
And Chrome Dome. That's probably my favorite. It might not be the best fight, but it is probably my favorite of the year.
I got my boy in there.
We good in forgetting Shredder?
Yes, I think you already forgot
Shredder. Giving Jeff
a moral victory.
Yeah, pair here. Okay. Best line. I got nothing here. Okay.
This is pretty much all me.
I mean, maybe Tony had a boy by Kratos.
No, that's me too. It was all me.
I'm not even sure.
I don't even think he says it that much.
He does not say it. Like, yeah.
Okay, so I know this is probably a hard one to like sit there and go, oh, you know what? But when I came up with it, I'm like, this is fun because there were some lines in games to me that I really loved, and I think we should keep it around. So like next year when you guys are, or this year when you guys are playing games, like
keep this in mind,
like a cool line that a character says.
Yep. Okay, so here's what Jeff wrote down, who I think will also be deciding this one because I don't think any of us.
I feel strongly about this one too.
Strong pick here, but. It's been real from Rabid Peach. Put your foolish ambitions to rest by is it Margit.
Margit, yeah.
A tarnished cannot become a lord, not even you, Gideon. And sending out healing vibes, literally.
All right, Rabbit Peach. I need to first explain Rabbit Peach because.
I mean, you don't. She's amazing.
Okay, her line delivery.
Yeah, that's right. That's a line delivery. Rick. It's like, whatever. Here you go.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, a lot of times at the end of a battle, she'll just be like, "It's been real." I really love her saying that.
She was my favorite from the first.
Yeah, game. Yeah. And then you know she has the heel move, and she'll say that other line. Look, I have a really strong one. Like for me, I came up with this category and entered all the things in it, but like the one that has stuck in my mind the whole time, and I think is like a distillation of the spirit of their games is put your foolish ambitions to rest. Because that's the very first boss of the game, like first big boss in Elden Ring. As he kills you, he says, put your foolish ambitions to rest. And it's the game, like, kind of taunting you, like, this is impossible. You can't do it. Don't even try. But it just motivates you more. It motivates you more to go, I want to come back and kill you. Like, I think it's such a perfect distillation of, like, the spirit of their games that, like, I would get a tattoo of it.
Oh, God. You should
don't do that.
I don't have any tattoos yet, so if I'm, I've long said to Melissa, if I got a tattoo, like my first tattoo would either be a Zelda or one of their games. The other one is kind of the same thing, but actually, it's like the opposite. It's like this guy, Sir Gideon Offner, he guards like the end of the game. Like behind him, there's just two bosses, and they're the final bosses, and he's just like a. He's a spellcaster guy that could do every spell in the game, and he could be a pain in the ass to beat sometimes. But when you do beat him, as he's dying, he says, a tarnished cannot become a lord, not even you. And it's just like him being like, you can't do this, but you just did, you know? But to me, I just have so many memories of fighting Margit the first weekend over and over and over and trying to beat him and him saying that to me over and over. And it motivating me more to beat the game or to beat him. I just think it just really sums up like what the appeal of those games are. So my strong vote is for put your foolish ambitions to rest.
I think you are the only one that has any strong vote. So
right. Like I was trying to think of one for this category. I'm like, I can't think of
it. It's one keep in mind for this year. I think it's a fun, like another, like yeah, weapon. I think it's a fun.
It's a fun one, but I think you'd have to go into the year.
So I had like the things down. that were just fresh in my brain. Like, so, you know what I mean?
What I'll do for next year, we can keep this one in there is I'll just open up the spreadsheet, share it with you guys early, and you can just fill in shit as we go along. Might actually be better for the year.
Yeah, then we can come up with other categories too.
Yeah,
like maybe something comes to mind.
Jeff, what do you want to cut here?
The sending out healing vibes, literally. I like it. It's cute, but it's not. You just hurt. It's been real so often. I just love the way she says it.
She's great.
She's love so her. Awesome, and she's a great teammate as a healer. Like. And she does this awesome, like, rocket attack. She's so good.
You know, for a category that we didn't have any input, I'm glad the Rabbit Peach, you know, made it in there. All right, best series evolution. Sonic Frontiers, Pokemon Legends Arceus, Elden Ring with a question mark. Not sure on that one. I'm not sure why it has a question mark is what I'm saying.
Not sure if it counts.
It doesn't count. Oh, okay. Tony's making an executive decision. It does not count. It's a Souls-ish thing.
I would say, but
it is a new series. Also, in that spirit, though, so I added Atari 50, the anniversary collection, and I'll give my logic for why I included it.
Okay.
It's not so much it's not an evolution of Atari, right? Like, it's just a collection of games. It is the evolution of that type of collection, right? Like this is the high end of what collection should be.
My pitch for Elden Ring is also if you called it Dark Souls 4, no one would have blinked an eye. They would be like, oh, great evolution. But I hear you. If you guys don't want to count it, if you want to count it, I think it's the fucking shoe in. But if you don't want to count
No, it's like the other games. Like, this is my biggest problem with Elden Ring is, Jeff, you're like, this is the game that's going to turn you around on this kind of game, and it wasn't. Damn it, Jeff.
I hate you.
Go ahead, Earl.
Oh, I was going to say, I think, if anything, my vote would be for Pokemon Legends.
Yeah, that would be where I fall.
Because I feel like it was, like, an actual evolution of a franchise that's been around for 20-some odd years that people have complained about.
And this is literally what everybody wanted.
I feel the same way about Sonic Frontiers, which is my vote, is Sonic Frontiers. Like, I feel like Sonic Frontiers, like they've been so trying to figure out what to do with Sonic in 3D since it went 3D, and somehow this worked. And I hope it is the standard going forward, but maybe I'm alone on this one, I guess.
No, I could see that, but I mean, and Sonic could stay, but I really do think Pokemon was like, because Sonic has tried different stuff. Pokemon has kind of did the same thing for generation, and don't get like it's added stuff. I don't always think it's the stuff fans wanted, but it's added stuff where I felt like Legends was like, oh, we are radically going to try something very different, something that we've never done before. Like, even the fact that it gets away from the core premise of like going around and collecting badges, and that's not even part of the game. Like, tied it into research. I mean, honestly, I was one of the reasons I haven't picked up Scarlet and Violet is like, I'm upset it didn't take some of these smart evolutions, like actually making grinding a fun part of the game by like having it tied into like research and like, okay, catch X number of Pokemons of this type, catch flying Pokemon, catch them from behind, catch them at night. It's like, okay, it's a fun way to actually like, oh, okay, this actually makes catching Pokemon, there's a scientific reason why it's tied into it. You're building this Pokédex, and it's like taking the core elements, and it's like, how can we make this fresh, new, and exciting? And I thought that was a really great change for the franchise, and I hope they continue. I mean, it did sell decently, but
and what's the point for Sonic Frontiers?
It's a 3D Sonic game going open world. I mean. Okay. It's kind of the same open world that Pokemon does, where it's like, you know, five different zones, but it worked somehow. Like I was so skeptical of somehow, like how do you pull off, like they could barely pull it off in 3D to begin with. How are you going to do it open world? And they somehow did.
See, I think those are two different things though. First, like part of you is arguing that it counts because it's like, oh, they actually made a decent game.
It is unlike any other.
It is. And I don't disagree with you on that. I'm just saying, like, part of your argument does sound like it's like, I'm just surprised they didn't screw it up. Which is also a big thing for the Sonic team.
That's always a fair assessment.
That not screwing it up is an evolution of what they usually do.
That is sadly true.
I'm leaning Pokemon here. Tony?
I support Pokemon here. I like it. I like that.
I'm glad that they made a good Sonic game, and I do want to play it, and it is on my wish list for when it gets under like $30. So
I got it on the 30. Oh,
so I'm not paying much attention then. So
it's good. I don't know, because like, I can't like tell Chris, oh, you're gonna like it, because like sometimes I don't get where he's coming from with platformers where he doesn't like Donkey Kong. I'm like, I don't get that one really. I kind of get it, but I kind of don't.
I never like Donkey Kong. Yeah, so it's, I mean, it's.
I don't know what your feel is. What's your feel on 3D Sonics though?
Like, I'm not a huge fan. Like, I like.
You don't like any of it?
It's fine. Like, I'm just not like. I really want to play this.
See, I don't know where you're gonna fall on it.
Yeah, so like I think I need to wait for it to or keep my eye open and see where when it gets low again. Give it a shot and not blame anybody if I don't like it. So all right. Pokemon Legends Arceus, yeah. Best series evolution, followed by Sonic Frontiers and a disqualified Elden Ring.
I'm going to step away for a second. I kind of defer to you guys on these next two categories, although my vote for disappointment is Callisto. And for the final category, I have no dog in that fight.
Okay, so right, Jeff alluded to next category is best, not best disappointment.
I wanted you to finish.
Biggest disappointment, most disappointment. I don't know.
Most disappointing or biggest disappointment.
Yeah. We have a list of six here. The Callisto Protocol, Gotham Knights, Saints Row with a question mark. Tunic with a question mark, so I'm not really sure what we're going for there. A Microsoft first party lineup and Need for Speed Unbound.
Madden's not on here, but I don't
know. We can add it.
Yeah.
Madden. Do we know why Tunic has a question mark?
Might have added.
It was probably Jeff.
Was okay. Tunic the It's probably because it started off as a Zelda game and it became unbearably hard and not fun, but I can't.
That could be. I mean, Jeff said he's deferring to us on this. I don't think Tunic was a disappointment. It just ended up not being what it's still, I think it's still a good game. And I don't think it hangs in a category that is like biggest disappointment or most disappointing. Saints Row. Do we know? Did you guys add that one, or was that Jeff too?
I think that was probably Jeff, but I can understand why that game, like that game. I
really like Saints Row. I really wanted it to be good. It launched in a piss poor state, so I just haven't played it yet, so I can't. Like, I mean, I guess I could be disappointed that I spent $60 and haven't played it, but not really that bent about it. So, unless you guys are like, yes, Saints Row needs to be there, I think we can cut both the question marks.
I don't really care.
You don't care.
Gotham Knights.
Again,
do you have any thoughts?
Oh, again, it wasn't me. I've not played it. I honestly didn't have huge expectations for it.
Yeah, neither.
I mean, honestly, I mean, the one I put is Microsoft first party. And that was just because, like, I think after spending literally billions of dollars on purchasing several massive studios,
yeah,
the fact that they've had nothing to show for. And it's not like it's been one or like these have been many, many, many years in the making, and they had nothing to show for it.
Well, and you just came off a year where they had a very good year, right? Like in 2021, where they released Gears Tactics, Forza Horizon 5, Halo, Psychonauts. Like they had a good lineup, and then nothing.
And then nothing.
Like, I think that Earl, I am with you. That belongs on this list.
Yeah, I'm still so befuddled by.
Like, why did you spend all the money on these studios if you're not going to use them to make games?
And I'm sure you will, but it's just like I think.
Are you sure?
That is fair. That is fair. I want to believe.
13 days, guys.
Oh yeah, that is. I guess yes, that is something we'll talk about in 2 weeks when they do have that show, which. I get it, and I think we all joked about it when it was announced. It's still weird that your biggest game that you announced for release date in 2021, I believe, is not going to be here.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be the first half of this year. That does not fill people with a ton of confidence.
Absolutely not. Yeah. I think Microsoft's first-party lineup belongs in here. I added Need for Speed Unbound. Jeff's not here to talk about. I added it though because like he seemed really hyped for it.
I think you folks enjoyed it.
Jeff didn't. He turned on it really quickly, like quicker than he turns on things. he went from like, yeah, this is really cool, it looks cool, to being like, I hate this game. It is unfair. It is not fun. He had a bunch of clips where he was like, maybe that's why you were like, because like, hey, like, why is anybody posting clips? He was posting clips because he was like showing how much he hated it. Like, it's broken. Like, I'm stuck under a bridge. The cops won't go away. But I don't know if it hangs here with Microsoft or Madden. And since Jeff's not here to talk about it, we can just cut it. I think Callisto Protocol belongs on this list. Like that was a game I was hugely excited for, and it was fine, I guess.
That sounds about right for the Callisto Protocol's reception.
And it has like really like the, you fight the same boss, and this is where I kind of came with all boss fights suck. It's like you fight the same boss four times in that game, and then they put you against a final boss that is just super unfun to play. Yeah, super disappointing for me. And my disappointment in that game caused Jeff to be like, to his wife, do not get me this game for Christmas. he had originally asked for it. It's like, I do not want it anymore. I think those are our three. I think we've talked about Madden, so.
Yeah, 2 weeks. I'm very curious to see what Microsoft has to offer.
Yeah, Tony, did you add Gotham Knights, or was that Jeff as well?
That must have been Jeff.
Yes, I think Earl and I know what Gotham Knights is.
Yes, I did not have any expectation. I mean, I do, again, that's why I'm waiting for a price drop. It's like, it looked janky from the get-go. Like, I had no expectations of it. That's where disappointment comes from. And it wasn't like the A-team. If this was Rocksteady.
No, it's not Rocksteady.
That would be a different. It's WB Montreal.
Yes, Origins, right? Batman Origins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my biggest disappointment from Gotham Knights comes from Earl going, "Hey, it's $35," and I went, "All right, I'm getting it. We're gonna play this." And then Earl goes, "I'm gonna wait because Walt said it might be on Game Pass." So I have Gotham Knights and have not played it. And I'm waiting for Earl to eventually buy it or to come to Game Pass.
And I will also say, this is just me being terrible, is I went to the Walmart site to buy it one day. Like, and then I was like, oh, the sale's over. I'm like, oh, I missed it. I was like so mad at myself. So yes, that is a thing. So that happened.
Good with Microsoft first party lineup winning this.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
It's astounding. Like, how do you have so many studios and nothing? Nothing.
It is amazing.
Yes. Super disappointing. Hopefully, January 25th. But we'll have to wait for whenever to hear about Starfield. The game I think we are all actually...
The game everyone's like, oh, we want this game. Why isn't it on the list?
Right. Like, I want to play Redfall. That game looks fun, but that is not the game I'm waiting for from them. same with Forza and what's that Minecraft game? Minecraft...
Legends,
yeah.
And I don't. Which one is Legends?
They call it a strategy game. It does not look like a strategy game, but
oh,
okay. Because my first thought was not Legends, Dungeons, and it's not that. So this is another one, and I'm just like, I don't remember. Like, I'm sure they showed it off before. I'm like, I just don't. This did not ring a bell.
It's an action strategy game. I don't know what that means though, because I think we've only gotten an action trailer, so don't really know what the strategy portion of it is. All right, Microsoft's first party lineup winner of a biggest disappointment or most disappointing of 2022. Final category here: best non video game gaming media. Earl has filled these in, I assume.
Yes.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2, Uncharted, The Cuphead Show, Sonic Prime, Halo TV Show, and Resident Evil. I enjoyed both Halo and Resident Evil. I think we can cut those. Those are not the best of anything.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was a slightly different category. in the sense that I just kind of went through and picked everything that came out this year and not necessary stuff I thought. Because I famously did not hate the Halo show, and I have not finished season one. But I was just like, oh, it would be nice, because I think it was something was announced this week. I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that came out last year. So, yeah, there's what, six things on this list? Five, six things? Mm-hmm. So I was like, yeah, I completely forgot that Resident Evil happened last year. Because that kind of came and went and got canceled by Netflix right away. But
yeah, I was looking forward. Like, I mean, I think that show, I don't know if it ever felt like Resident Evil, but I was interested in where it was going by the end of it. And then we're never seeing anything from that again. So. Fucking Netflix, man.
Oh, duh. What triggered this was that the Last of Us review started to pop out this week.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And people started talking about that.
And I think it's a good category, Earl. That's another one we should probably fill in as the year goes on.
And I love the fact you put the Cuphead show on here. Like, I have watched every episode of the Cuphead show.
I would almost say give it to that, because like I just love their art in the game. Like,
so if you watch it, it really calls back to like Warner Brothers cartoons and like, yeah, funny. Like it's so much fun, but the episodes are like all connected, and like the relationship between Cuphead and Mugman is so fun, and the fact that they give life to these characters in a way that like really corresponds to how they exist in the game, it's really, really good.
I'm not opposed to that. What is Sonic Prime? I don't know what that is.
Oh, it's the Sonic TV show that's on Netflix that premiered in December. And it takes place in the continuity of the games, but it's a weird one because it's Netflix. So Netflix does that weird thing where it's like, here's like half the season, so but like there's a fracture in time space, and so like Sonic goes through like, there's like a post-apocalyptic one where like a gang of robotics have taken over the city. There's one where I think a bunch of my like, robots. There's one where like they're cavemen. There's one where they're pirates. And it's like, so Sonic, our Sonic is still just kind of the main character he's going through. And he'll find like Knuckles and Rouge and Amy and Tails. And like trying to kind of get the shard crystal, which is kind of what fracturing the universe is a mess, waking him travel through. So it's a cute show, but like I said, because it's Netflix, like it feels so incomplete because season one is half of the season. So you got that, and then it's just like, okay, what's next? But I have enjoyed it so far. It's like 20, 25 minutes, so the episodes go by pretty quick.
Sonic the Hedgehog 2. I haven't seen it yet. How do we feel about that as a movie?
It's an enjoyable movie.
Okay. But better than Sonic Prime? Comparable to Sonic Prime?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think the movie's better. Because the movie's complete story, and I think Jim Carrey is I'm just screwing this up so bad. Jim Carrey's having an absolute fastest Robotnik, so you got that going for him.
Yeah, he always, like, I mean, I loved him in the first film. Still do need to watch the second one. Maybe I'll do that this weekend. But
the human characters still remain completely useless. I get that they wanted to ground it in something, but I'm just like, yeah, it's even worse in this one, because that wedding sequence just takes me out of it. But other than that, I do like the gist of the movie. So,
and how do we feel about the Uncharted film? I did see this. I enjoyed it, but I don't know where you guys land on it.
Wait, are we the ones who have seen it?
I've seen none of these things. So that's why I said I was.
You're voting Cuphead.
Yeah, just because I like the art.
I mean, Cuphead is fantastic. I can't like fault it.
Yeah, I think that is here. We're like, I think that's locked into the top three. Just, you know, finalizing this other piece. Earl, what did you feel about Uncharted?
I am not a huge fan of Uncharted.
Okay.
I think I think especially in a year where we got stuff like The Lost City, there were better adventure movies this year. I thought that it felt very generic and routine. I think Tom Holland was kind of miscast.
Very much.
So it's not like, it's not a super strong movie. Okay, I'll write back.
I liked Uncharted, but yeah, I mean, it is generic. It is generic adventure movie. And calling Tom Holland Nathan Drake is weird. All right, so I think that leaves us Cuphead, Sonic, and Sonic. Tony felt very strongly about Cuphead.
I do. I don't normally watch like video game movies. And
yeah, me too. Really. That's why it's like I haven't seen that. So.
All right. I think we gold Cuphead here.
Yeah.
And the two Sonics are solid follow, runners up. I'm gonna take Earl's word for it on Sonic Prime. But I fully believe that Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is actually a decent, fun movie. So, that's it. That is our category awards. We're gonna be off next week. Let's make that call right now. Tony is away, doing stuff, and we don't have time to do our top 10 tonight. So
we failed.
We will come back in 2 weeks. We will cover the Microsoft event where they're not talking about Starfield, and we'll do our top 10s there, and then move on with 2023. So gaming should be in full swing by then too, right? Like Dead Space will be out, Monster Hunter will be out.
That's right.
We'll have some games to kind of move into February with. I will open up 2023 categories so we can fill them in as the year goes on. Just want to circle back. What are your guys' thoughts on... So we had Best Game Pass Discovery. What if we fill in something like, if we have like maybe a Game Pass Game of the Month or something, where we pick a game that we really liked from Game Pass each month and just prop it in there.
That'd be fun.
And then we have a category called like Game Pass Game of the Year based on those 12 choices or whatever.
I like that.
All right. Sorry. Excuse me. I don't know. Did we lose Earl?
I think he had to go take care of his dog.
Taking care of his dog. All right. So... we will be back in 2 weeks then. Jeff, say goodnight.
Good night.